Testing 1, 2, 3, testing 1, 2, 3. This is Radio Free Mormon on the air, broadcasting behind enemy lines. Tonight's episode, The Convenient Revelation. And I'm also titling it Joseph Smith's Fingerprints on the Book of Mormon. What I've been doing for the last few days is, in preparation for this evening, I have been reviewing the first 124 pages of the Book of Mormon. I've already read that far, and I wanted to go back over it again, kind of speed read it, get at the 20,000 foot view. That's the second time through, by the way. First time is word for word. Second time I'm going through, I want to get a feel for something specific, because what I am struck by, even though I've read the Book of Mormon at least 20, 30 times in my life, what I'm struck by this time is the sheer number of references in the Book of Mormon to the small plates of Nephi, or the two separate records that are contained from the beginning of the Book of Nephi and the Book of Mormon up through the Book of Mosiah. Okay, so having said that much, let's review, all right? So I've prepared some slides that will help me walk through this particular subject. It's also being released under Mormon Sunday School, where you learn stuff you're never going to hear in regular Sunday school. It's lesson 14 there. And here is what we're talking about, the convenient revelation, which also deals with the lost 116 pages and the small plates of Nephi. All right, the recap of the story of the lost 116 pages. I'm sure that you all know this story and you've heard it 100 times at church. But here it is in synopsized form for those of you who were asleep during church. Number one, Martin Harris is the primary scribe for the translation of the first 116 pages of the Book of Mormon in 1828. Number two, Martin Harris wants to take the pages to show the translation to his wife, thinking it will convert her, a cunning plan. Number three, Joseph Smith permits it, but Martin Harris loses the 116 pages. I put loses in quotation marks because I don't know, did he lose them? Were they stolen? We don't know, but they were gone. Did his wife find them? Did she burn them? Did she tear them up? Or did she keep them? Martin Harris doesn't know. All Martin knows is they are gone. And that is apparently all that Joseph Smith knows as well. And here's the second slide on the recap of the story. There's only two slides. It's a brief recap, as I said. Joseph will recommence the translation of the Book of Mormon the following year in April of 1829 with Oliver Cowdery. But what will Joseph do about the missing 116 pages? If Joseph reproduces that first part of the Nephite history, because he's gone from the beginning of the Book of Mormon narrative down to the Book of Mosiah, he's gone basically what is 124 pages in today's edition of the Book of Mormon, which is roughly one quarter of the entirety of the Book of Mormon, 124 pages. He's gone that far. What is he going to do about that? Is he going to just forget it, good riddance? Hopefully I'll learn better in the future not to let people borrow pages from the Book of Mormon to show family members to convert them. Or is he going to try to reproduce them? He's almost in a corner where he has to try to reproduce them. The problem is he doesn't know where the other 116 pages are. If he knew that they had been burned or otherwise destroyed, he'd be fine just to go back and start over at the beginning. But he doesn't know. And his concern is, what happens if I retranslate this? And then they bring forward the 116 pages and say, ha, look, it's different. You really couldn't translate after all. Your gift and power of God is just your imagination. This is Joseph Smith's fear. This is his concern, and this is his anxiety. And this is why it is that he comes up with this clever plan to cover the same time period, but do it in such a way as to avoid the danger of being caught off first base with a different kind of translation. Notice the underlying assumption that Joseph Smith shares. It comes out of the Doctrine and Covenants, section 10, which we'll get to in a minute as well. The underlying assumption that he shares and never challenges is that by the gift and power of God, he should be able to retranslate word for word identically those 116 pages. He shares that view. There's nothing that he says, oh, it's a loose translation, so it's okay, you know. It's a totally tight translation as far as Joseph Smith is concerned. A loose translation had to wait for many, many decades after his death to get proposed in order to take care of some other Book of Mormon problems. Having said that, what will Joseph do about the missing 116 pages? If Joseph reproduces that first part of the Nephite history, will Lucy Harris bring the 116 pages forward to show the translation is different? At this point, Joseph Smith obtains a convenient revelation. And I didn't come up with this expression to describe Section 10 of the Doctrine and Covenants, a convenient revelation. That was in a book I read back in the 1980s. And I found it, I got to tell you, it was somewhat disturbing, mainly because, yeah, it is a terribly convenient revelation, isn't it? It's a story that all Mormons know. It's a story that I learned shortly after my joining the church. And it's a story that I didn't think about an awful lot, mainly because it's kind of uncomfortable to think about a story that if you think about it too much, it's going to unravel in front of your very eyes. And there goes your religious faith that you just joined. At this point, Joseph Smith obtains a convenient revelation from God contained in Doctrine and Covenants, Section 10. Now, Doctrine and Covenants, Section 10, here's the relevant passages. This will take a few slides, but it's very detailed. It explains everything. And God explains to Joseph Smith what he needs to do now that the 116 pages are lost, because God himself has a very clever plan, and he actually implemented it back in the days of Mormon, the editor and abridger of the Book of Mormon. Here's what it says, starting with verse 8. And because you have delivered, this is God speaking directly to Joseph, and because you have delivered the writings into his hands, that's Martin Harris's hands, behold, wicked men have taken them from you. Therefore, you have delivered them up, yea, that which was sacred, unto wickedness. And behold, Satan hath put it into their hearts to alter the words which you have caused to be written, or which you have translated, which have gone out of your hands. And behold, I say unto you that because they have altered the words. So God is saying, I know what's going on. I am God. I got the bird's eye view on everything that's happening. They haven't burned the pages. They haven't torn them up. They have kept them. That's Joseph Smith's fear, remember. They have kept them. And God says, not only that, but they have altered the words. And they read contrary from that which you translated and caused to be written. Now, this leaves open the question of how on earth it is that anybody who took those pages could alter the words in such a way as to bring them forth later on and make this demonstration that God is telling Joseph Smith they would make. Because it's on fool's cap paper, right? There's no copy and pasting. There's no deleting. There's not even whiteout, for crying out loud, at this time. It would be obvious if you changed words on the same piece of paper. So 116 pages, if you go through and change words, you'd have to strike them out. You'd have to write above them. It would be obvious that the words had been altered. So this part really doesn't make a lot of sense. This is one of the things that I didn't want to think about too much back when I was a faithful member of the church, because it gets deep fast. It gets troublesome fast, and it starts to look like it doesn't really make sense as a story pretty quickly. And this is one of the ways in which it happens. The only feasible way, and it's not really feasible, is that they would have to completely copy over this 116 pages, and as they're doing it, change the words here and there as they went. That's the only way they could present something that looked like it hadn't been marked out and written on to change the words, right? And yet if they did that, that would be very laborious. It would also be pretty evident that it was different handwriting than the handwriting of Martin Harris. And that would be simple to show it was a fake. So pretty much any way you look at this idea, it doesn't add up. It wouldn't make sense that people could take the 116 pages, which had been taken and stolen, alter the words, bring it forward at a later date to compare it with the Book of Mormon and say, ha, it doesn't match up. You're not a true prophet. Okay? Doesn't work. But once again, notice, and we'll see it here as well in Section 10, that Joseph Smith and God apparently are operating from this fundamental position that Joseph Smith could and should be able to retranslate word for word what it is that was in the original 116 pages. Otherwise, the scheme that God comes up with for Joseph Smith doesn't make any sense. Once again, verse 11, and behold, I say unto you that because they have altered the words, they read contrary from that which you translated and caused to be written. Going on, for he hath put into their hearts to do this, that by lying, they may say they have caught you in the words which you have pretended to translate. Verily I say unto you that I will not suffer that Satan shall accomplish his evil design in this thing. For behold, he has put it into their hearts to get thee to tempt the Lord thy God in asking to translate it over again. And then, behold, they say and think in their hearts, we will see if God has given him power to translate. If so, he will also give him power again. And if God giveth him power again, or if he translates again, or in other words, if he bringeth forth the same words, behold, we have the same with us, and we have altered them. See how this doesn't make any sense when you actually take a little time and think about it? Therefore, they will not agree, the words in the different translations. And we will say that he has lied in his words, and that he has no gift, and that he has no power. Therefore, we will destroy him and also the work, and we will do this that we may not be ashamed in the end, and that we may get glory of the world. See, Joseph Smith believed the Book of Mormon was a tight or word-for-word translation. I put that down there in brackets. I've already covered that. And continuing in Doctrine and Covenants, section 10. Now, here's the workaround that God had envisioned, seen in the future, yea, verily, 1,400 years before Joseph Smith was translating the Book of Mormon. That God, he is so smart. And now, verily, I say unto you that an account of those things that you have written, which have gone out of your hands, is engraven upon the plates of Nephi. There's a second record. It covers the same things. It's just a different record, the same time period from Lehi leaving Jerusalem with his family up to King Benjamin, who starts the Book of Mosiah. Yea, and you remember it was said in those writings that a more particular account was given of these things upon the plates of Nephi. Ah, and now because the account which is engraven upon the plates of Nephi is more particular concerning the things which in my wisdom I would bring to the knowledge of the people in this account, therefore you shall translate the engravings which are on the plates of Nephi down even till you come to the reign of King Benjamin. See, King Benjamin begins with Lehi, ends with King Benjamin. Or until you come to that which you have translated, which you have retained. All right, now notice that part there. Or until you come to that part which you have translated, which you have retained. Now this is the Mosiah priority, and this is one of the clear statements in the scriptures that talks about the Mosiah priority. The Mosiah priority, which was discovered a couple of decades, maybe three decades ago by Brent Metcalf, is this. When Joseph Smith is translating, he translates the first 116 pages. It covers Lehi leaving Jerusalem. It covers up to King Benjamin. Those get lost. They get stolen. And now Joseph Smith, once the power is restored to him, again to translate, he doesn't begin at the beginning again. He begins where he left off at the beginning of the Book of Mosiah. He translates through the end of the Book of Mormon to Moroni, which is the last book in the Book of Mormon, and then he begins again at the beginning with Lehi leaving Jerusalem and translates it up to the place where the pages were left. In other words, up to King Benjamin. All right, now that's what happens in the Book of Mormon. That's the Mosiah priority, once again discovered by Brent Metcalf. Pretty much everybody agrees with it, faithful and non-believing scholars as well, accept this because it makes sense of the evidence and it makes sense of passages like this where it says, therefore you shall translate the engravings which are on the plates of Nephi down even till you come to the reign of King Benjamin, or until you come to that which you have translated. See, he's already translated it, which you have retained and which you've kept with you. So that's one of those tells that Joseph Smith actually started the retranslation with the Book of Mosiah, went to the end of the Book of Mormon, came back to the beginning, started with what is now 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 1, and then went to the Book of Mosiah. That's the Mosiah priority. Very important to understand that because we can start seeing things in the Book of Mormon that we might not see otherwise or that might not make sense otherwise if we thought that it was just translated beginning to end the way we have it today, which it was not. Okay, having said that, let's go on. Oh, there's more to read. Like I said, this is a very cunning plan in section 10 of the Doctrine and Covenants. And behold, you shall publish it as the record of Nephi, and thus I will confound those who have altered my words. I will not suffer that they shall destroy my work. Yea, I will show unto them that my wisdom is greater than the cunning of the devil. Behold, and this I highlight, behold, they have only got a part or an abridgment of the account of Nephi. This is Mormon's abridgment. Remember, he abridges pretty much everything into the Book of Mormon. He ends up adding some writings of his own, hands them off to his son, Moroni, who adds some writings of his own. Boom, that's the end of the Book of Mormon. So what they're saying here is that Mormon had done an abridgment from Lehi, the beginning, up to King Benjamin, or the Book of Mosiah. That's the abridgment, and that's what they got with 116 pages. But good news is there's a separate account on different plates that are still there in the gold plates that Joseph Smith has that covers the exact same period of time from Lehi leaving Jerusalem up to King Benjamin, and you can translate those instead. And then we'll have a complete narrative from the beginning to the end, and everything will be fine, and you won't be able to be caught out. They won't be able to show that you're a false prophet, or at least claim that you're a false prophet. So it says, behold, they have only got a part or an abridgment of the account of Nephi. Behold, there are many things engraven upon the plates of Nephi, which do throw greater views upon my gospel. Therefore, it is wisdom in me that you should translate this first part of the engravings of Nephi and send forth in this work. All right. Joseph was distraught over this, and that's completely understandable. I would have been too. Even by the time the first edition of the Book of Mormon came off the press in March of 1830, even by that time, Joseph wanted to make sure that everybody who read it knew about the convenient revelation of translating a different portion of the record that covered the same time period. It appears Joseph was still fearful Lucy Harris or someone else would produce the 116 pages and claim the Book of Mormon was not a real translation because the words were different. By the way, this may also play into why it was that Joseph Smith didn't go back to the beginning and start retranslating, but started at the Book of Mosiah, went to the end, came back around, because that gave him time. In other words, while he's translating this part from Mosiah on to Moroni, there's time for those 116 pages to still show up, but they didn't. But maybe he was hoping that they would, and he would know one way or another. They end up not showing up, so he goes with his plan B that's talked about in section 10 and retranslates, but he's translating a different set of plates. By the way, both of the plates are called the plates of Nephi, and this is interesting because it infuses confusion into the narrative. They're both called plates of Nephi, and then they're called big plates and small plates of Nephi. Let me just talk about this for a second, okay? They're both called the plates of Nephi. He translates the large plates of Nephi. That's the first one, the 116 pages, right? He gets back to these other plates that are called Nephi as well, and we'll see some passages where that confusion is evident. But then he translates the small plates. So they're called big plates or large plates and small plates, but they're both plates of Nephi. So the question then is, if these plates are smaller, what does that look like when they're actually in the gold plates? You know, with the holes in them, and they're there with the sealed portion, and above the sealed portion are these plates from which the Book of Mormon was translated. Nobody who looked at those and left a description, and there are a few of those, nobody to my knowledge said anything about there being a set of plates that were smaller in dimensions than the regular plates on top. So maybe they just overlooked it. It would seem to that it would stand out in some way, that you would have plates that are smaller in dimension than the ones that are on top, but regardless. So even though this plan would be hard to pull off, as one could tell if they changed the words on the original manuscript, and if they recopied the entire thing using different words, it would be patently obvious. We talked about that as well. Now, Joseph printed a preface in the Book of Mormon, the 1830 account of the Book of Mormon, to let the reader know about the two sets of plates. Joseph Smith was sufficiently anxious about this and derailing his whole Book of Mormon that he printed a preface in the 1830 original copy of the Book of Mormon. We're going to look at that here in a second. And there is my copy of the 1830 Book of Mormon. No, actually, it's not the 1830 copy. It is a replica, however, of the 1830 copy of the Book of Mormon. It was produced by the church back in 1980, I think it was, on the 150th anniversary. All right, but that is the replica that I have. And you look inside, says the Book of Mormon. That's the page, the title page. And then there's a preface. And what this preface says is this. Now listen, because Joseph Smith is so anxious about this. Okay, he's so anxious that even after the Book of Mormon is published, that those 116 pages are going to show up, that he wants to make sure that he anticipates that eventuality, that possibility. And he puts a preface in here that explains it all to the reader. He wants to make sure everybody who reads the Book of Mormon is going to know that there are two sets of plates, and that he went and translated the smaller ones after the big ones, the translation, the 116 pages were lost, and he translates the small ones. He wants to make sure that everybody knows that if those 116 pages show up and they don't match, that it's okay because he was translating a different set of plates that cover the same time period. Here's the preface. It's addressed to the reader. As many false reports have been circulated respecting the following work and also many unlawful measures taken by evil designing persons to destroy me and also the work, I would inform you that I translated by the gift and power of God and caused to be written 116 pages, the which I took from the Book of Lehi, which was an account abridged from the plates of Lehi. So now this is called the Book of Lehi, the 116 pages. And from the plates of Lehi, by the hand of Mormon, which said account, by the hand of Mormon, by the way, that means that Mormon abridged it. This is the abridgment, by the hand of Mormon, which said account some person or persons have stolen and kept from me, notwithstanding my utmost exertions to recover it again. And being commanded of the Lord that I should not translate the same over again, for Satan had put it into their hearts to tempt the Lord their God, by altering the words that they did read contrary from that which I translated and caused to be written, and if I should bring forth the same words again, or in other words, if I should translate the same over again, they would publish that which they had stolen, and Satan would stir up the hearts of this generation that they might not receive this work. But behold, the Lord said unto me, I will not suffer that Satan shall accomplish his evil design in this thing. Therefore, thou shalt translate from the plates of Nephi. See, it's just the plates of Nephi here, not large or small. Until ye come to that which ye have translated. Here, the distinction actually in the preface, and this is interesting, the distinction being made here is between the plates of Lehi, which he did translate, 116 pages lost, and now he goes back and he translates the plates of Nephi, a separate set of plates. And I'm not seeing it talk about large or small plates here, not at this point. Therefore, thou shalt translate from the plates of Nephi until ye come to that which ye have translated, which ye have retained, and behold, ye shall publish it as the record of Nephi. So we got first Nephi and second Nephi, right? And thus I will confound those who have altered my words. I will not suffer that they shall destroy my work. Yea, I will show unto them that my wisdom is greater than the cunning of the devil. Wherefore, to be obedient unto the commandments of God, I have through his grace and mercy accomplished that which he hath commanded me respecting this thing. I would also inform you that the plates of which hath been spoken were found in the township of Manchester, Ontario, County, New York, and it's signed, not Joseph Smith, but the author, which is an interesting way for him to sign the preface to the Book of Mormon. But there you have it. Okay, so that is the preface to the Book of Mormon. Joseph's anxiety. We can understand Joseph Smith's anxiety to make sure that every person who read the Book of Mormon would understand about the two sets of plates. The one set which contained the more secular aspects of the Nephites, right? That it was this set that was translated into the 116 pages and lost. We can also understand Joseph Smith's anxiety to make sure all Book of Mormon readers would understand that the new translation of 1 Nephi to Mosiah is from a separate set of plates. And here I put the small plates of Nephi. That isn't in the preface, but it'll show up in the Book of Mormon. So that if the 116 pages were produced, the fact the 116 pages told a story different from the Book of Mormon would not be devastating to Joseph Smith's claims of being a translator for God. But Joseph Smith isn't the only one who has anxiety about this. The Book of Mormon appears to have some anxiety about this as well. In other words, making sure the reader understands the difference between the two sets of plates and that one gets translated. Actually, they both get translated, and there's two separate sets that are contained in the same record, covering the same period of time. What was quite unexpected for me, however, was how anxious the Book of Mormon is to make sure its readers understand the same thing that was making Joseph Smith so anxious. Over and over again, the Book of Mormon addresses the issue of the two different sets of plates. The issue this lesson will examine, or this podcast will examine, is why the Book of Mormon should be so concerned its audience understands this. Let me explain. From the Book of Mormon's perspective, God told them to keep two different sets of plates, one for secular matters and one for spiritual matters. And ultimately, God whispers to Mormon, the abridger, to include these unabridged plates for the record, even though it constitutes a duplicate set of the history from 1 Nephi to the Book of Mosiah. The Book of Mormon authors know nothing about the 116 pages that would be lost, or that the 1828 episode with Martin Harris could jeopardize the entire Book of Mormon project. They only know that two records should be kept. The question then is whether the Book of Mormon spends an inordinate amount of time reminding the reader about the two sets of plates, and if so, because it does, and if so, why the Book of Mormon would have the same level of angst as Joseph Smith over an issue that would not be anywhere near as critical to them. My research on this issue. While reading through the Book of Mormon this year for Radio Free Mormon Sunday School, I began to see a number of passages relating to the two sets of plates, more than I would think necessary for the Book of Mormon to make the point. I began to wonder how often the Book of Mormon references these two sets of plates, and whether the sheer number of references might suggest an anxiety on the part of the Book of Mormon for its readers to understand this issue that was on a par with Joseph Smith's anxiety. I went back this week and reread the first 145 pages from 1 Nephi up to the Book of Mosiah and marked down all the references I found. Now, here is the first reference, and I'm going to go to the end of the references. I'm going to go to the Words of Mormon, which comes in all of a sudden, out of the blue, you're reading through 1 Nephi, 2 Nephi, Jacob, Enos, Jerem, Omni, and now Words of Mormon, because Mormon comes in to explain to the reader something that the reader really doesn't even need to know. But it's very, very important to Mormon to explain to the reader basically the information that was contained in the preface that was written by Joseph Smith. And it's Words of Mormon, verses 3 through 9. I put a chapter 1 up there. There's really no chapter here. It's not long enough to have chapters. It's verses 3 through 9. And here's what it says. And now I speak. This is Mormon at the very end of Nephite history showing up out of the blue to explain this to the reader of the Book of Mormon in case they get confused. And now I speak somewhat concerning that which I have written. For after I had made an abridgment from the plates of Nephi, down to the reign of this King Benjamin, of whom Amalickiah spake, I searched among the records which had been delivered into my hands, and I found these plates, which contained this small account of the prophets, from Jacob down to the reign of this King Benjamin, and also many of the words of Nephi. Now, there where it says small, it seems to reference the size of the account, the length of the account, not the size of the plates. But he says, I found this small account of the prophets from Jacob down to the reign of this King Benjamin, and also many of the words of Nephi. And the things which are upon these plates, pleasing me because of the prophecies of the coming of Christ, and my fathers knowing that many of them have been fulfilled, yea, and I also know that as many things as have been prophesied concerning us down to this day have been fulfilled, and as many as go beyond this day must surely come to pass. Okay. Wherefore, I chose these things to finish my record upon them, which remainder of my record I shall take from the plates of Nephi. And I cannot write the hundredth part of the things of my people. But behold, I shall take these plates, which contain these prophesyings and revelations, and put them with the remainder of my record, for they are choice unto me, and I know they will be choice unto my brethren. Now, let me break in here for a second, okay? This is all completely unnecessary. From the Book of Mormon's point of view, if we put ourselves in the Book of Mormon's point of view, it has two sets of plates that cover the same ground. And what Mormon is ostensibly trying to explain is why there's two sets of plates that cover the same ground. He doesn't really need to do that. I mean, in the Old Testament, there's Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles, right? and Samuel and Kings are both together, and Chronicles replicates that same time period that's covered in the Old Testament books of Samuel and Kings. We don't need somebody to come in and explain that to us because we can tell that by looking. And yet it seems to weigh heavily on Mormon's mind that the reader of the Book of Mormon understand what's going on, which is interesting. Verse 7, and I do this for a wise purpose. Of course it's a wise purpose because those 116 pages have been lost. We're worried about them showing up, and we need a different set of plates that cover the same time period so that we can have our Book of Mormon. And I do this for a wise purpose, for thus it whispereth me, according to the workings of the Spirit of the Lord, which is in me. And now I do not know all things, but the Lord knoweth all things which are to come. Why does he put that in there? Why does Mormon put that in there? And now I do not know all things, but the Lord knoweth all things which are to come. Like the 116 pages getting lost? It's almost like he's tacitly pointing to that, isn't it? Wherefore, he worketh in me to do according to his will. And he goes on, and my prayer to God is concerning my brethren, that they may once again come to the knowledge of God, yea, the redemption of Christ, that they may once again be a delightsome people. And now I, Mormon, proceed to finish out my record, which I take from the plates of Nephi. And I make it according to the knowledge and the understanding which God has given me. Okay, so he's taking these plates of Nephi. Wherefore, it came to pass that after Amalickiah had delivered up these plates unto the hands of King Benjamin, that's the small plates, he took them and put them with the other plates. Ah, the large plates, the regular plates, the secular plates, right? Which contained records which had been handed down by the kings from generation to generation until the days of King Benjamin. It's always from beginning of the book to King Benjamin, because King Benjamin is as far as the translation had gotten when the 116 pages got lost. All right. So that's the words of Mormon, and we see that Mormon is very concerned about explaining this to the reader who doesn't really need to know. Mormon is showing a lot of anxiety about this, and he wants to make sure it's clear. Not sure exactly why he's so anxious about it. I understand why Joseph is anxious about it. Mormon, not so much, but there you go. And now we're going to go through the Book of Mormon, which will be through this area from the beginning up to the Book of Mosiah. And notice how big an issue this is for the Book of Mormon authors in that time period to make clear to the reader. It's not just Mormon. He's obviously very concerned, but let's look at other examples. Number two, 1 Nephi 1. This is the very beginning of the Book of Mormon. And remember, this is the translation of the small plates. These are the plates that were not abridged that Mormon says he put in there along with the others. So remember, this is Nephi at a later date, being told by God to make a separate record that contains the spiritual aspects of the people. So Nephi says, I, Nephi, having been born of goodly parents, therefore I was taught somewhat in all the learning of my fathers, and having seen many afflictions in the course of my days, nevertheless, you can quote it with me, having been highly favored of the Lord in all my days, yea, having had a great knowledge of the goodness and the mysteries of God, therefore I make a record of my proceedings in my days. Suddenly, those last words kind of leap off the page at me. And it goes on, yea, I make a record in the language of my father, which consists of the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians. And actually, I think it's 1 Nephi chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. But regardless, it's right there at the very beginning of the Book of Mormon that he's talking about these plates that he made and this record that Nephi is making. Not a record that Lehi's making. He's wanted to make that really clear to the reader. Number three, 1 Nephi 6, 1 through 6. This is the entire chapter. We're only six chapters into the Book of Mormon, and an entire chapter is given over to a discussion of this issue. This is what it says. And now I, Nephi, do not give the genealogy of my fathers in this part of my record, neither at any time shall I give it after upon these plates which I am writing, for it is given in the record which has been kept by my father. The plates of Lehi, remember? Wherefore, I do not write it in this work, for it sufficeth me to say that we are descendants of Joseph. And it mattereth not to me that I am particular to give a full account of all the things of my father, for they cannot be written upon these plates. For I desire the room that I may write of the things of God. See, he's making that distinction, making it clear to the audience. These are the other plates, the one where I'm writing the spiritual stuff, not the secular stuff like on my dad's plates. And it continues. For the fullness of mine intent is that I may persuade men to come unto the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob and be saved. Wherefore, the things which are pleasing unto the world, I do not write, but the things which are pleasing unto God and unto those who are not of the world. Wherefore, I shall give commandment unto my seed that they shall not occupy these plates with things which are not of worth unto the children of men. Well, there you go. That's an entire chapter of the Book of Mormon devoted to telling the reader about these two separate sets of plates. Why it is that Nephi would think that was important if he really lived as a character back around 600 BCE and he's writing this, I have no idea. I know it was important to Joseph, and it seems to be important to Nephi as well. First Nephi 9, 1 through 6, that was the entirety of the sixth chapter of First Nephi. We go three more chapters to chapter 9, and once again, it's a six-verse chapter. Its entirety is given to talking about the distinction between these two plates. And all these things did my father see and hear and speak as he dwelt in a tent. Remember, this is the chapter right after the vision or the dream of the tree of life from Lehi. In the valley of Lemuel, and also a great many more things which cannot be written upon these plates. Here he's at it again. And now as I have spoken concerning these plates, behold, they are not the plates upon which I make a full account of the history of my people. For the plates upon which I make a full account of my people, I have given the name of Nephi. Wherefore, they are called the plates of Nephi, after mine own name. And these plates also are called the plates of Nephi. I'm sorry. Notice this. He's trying to distinguish the two sets of plates, and he fails spectacularly because they both have the same name. They're both called the plates of Nephi. I'm going to read that again, okay? For the plates upon which I make a full account of my people, I have given the name of Nephi. Not Lehi, but Nephi. Wherefore, they are called the plates of Nephi, after mine own name. And these plates, remember the small plates? These plates also are called the plates of Nephi. So what is the point of having a name to distinguish two sets of plates when the name is the same? It's a good question. Verse 3. Nevertheless, I have received a commandment of the Lord that I should make these plates for the special purpose that there should be an account engraven of the ministry of my people. So they're hinting at the spiritual nature of these plates. Upon the other plates, oh my gosh, he cannot hammer this enough. He's obsessed with the subject. Upon the other plates should be engraven an account of the reign of the kings and the wars and contentions of my people. Wherefore, these plates are for the more part of the ministry. I think you just said that. And the other plates are for the more part of the reign of the kings and the wars and contentions of my people. This is Nephi writing this about wars and contentions. Really? With whom? It's not clear. We covered that in the last episode, talking about the problem of population in these early chapters of the Book of Mormon and the early books of the Book of Mormon. Nephi goes on. Wherefore, the Lord hath commanded me to make these plates for a wise purpose in him. That sounds like what Mormon said too in Words of Mormon. For a wise purpose in him, which purpose I know not. I got no idea. It's not like I'm really living in 1828 and I know anything about these lost 116 pages. So I don't know why. And here it gives it away, really. Because if he doesn't know why the Lord has whispered to him to make these plates, why is he making such a big deal out of it? You know, I could understand mentioning it, but over and over and over again and devoting entire chapters in First Nephi to the subject seems a bit much. Then he concludes by saying, but the Lord knoweth all things from the beginning. The Lord knoweth all things. He's doing it again. What is it, Nephi, that the Lord knows from the beginning? Nephi is signaling that he knows there's a reason that the Lord is doing this. And the reason has something to do with something that's going to happen in the future that he doesn't know, but the Lord knows. Exactly. It's not in order to have a separate set of plates just to talk about the spiritual stuff. And you can also have the stuff that talks about the reign of the kings. That makes sense. But no, once again, he has to tip his hand. This has to do with something in the future from Nephi's point of view. And that future, I think, is 1828. But the Lord knoweth all things from the beginning. Wherefore he prepareth a way to accomplish all his works among the children of men. Oh, yeah. For behold, he hath all power unto the fulfilling of all his words. And thus it is, amen. Nephi definitely knows about 1828 and the lost 116 pages. He gives it away in verse 6. All right, let's continue. That was example number 4 in the Book of Mormon about talking about the plates and how they can't talk enough about the plates. And they're obsessed over these two sets of plates. Number 5 is 1 Nephi chapter 10, verse 1. And now I, Nephi, proceed to give an account upon these plates of my proceedings and my reign and ministry. Wherefore, to proceed with mine account, I must speak somewhat of the things of my father and also of my brethren. Now, there are points in here where the purpose of these plates, which I'm just going to call the small plates, okay? They're both called the plates of Nephi. I'm going to call them the small plates right now. That's typically what they're called in the church. The small plates and the large plates. Because remember, the large plates we already read, the large plates were what were supposed to cover the reign and ministry of the kings, okay? 1 Nephi 9, 4. Upon the other plates, the large plates, should be engraven an account of the reign of the kings, right? And now, Nephi seems to be switching that around. Because here, once again, writing on the small plates, he says, and now I, Nephi, 1 Nephi 10, 1, proceed to give an account upon these plates. These are the small plates, they're ones I'm writing on, of my proceedings and my reign. He does say, in ministry, I guess. Wherefore, to proceed with mine account, I must speak somewhat of the things of my father and also of my brethren. I have to talk about them, okay? Rather not, because I'm trying to minimize the places where there could be contradictions between what's in those 116 pages that I can't remember word for word and what I'm translating here. But I must speak somewhat of the things of my father and also of my brethren. So there's the fifth example. Sixth example is 1 Nephi 10, same chapter. Verse 15, though, and Nephi writes, and after this manner of language did my father prophesy and speak unto my brethren, and also many more things which I do not write in this book. Now he's calling it a book, by the way. The plates he's calling a book. This book, the small plates, right? And also many more things which I do not write in this book, for I have written as many of them as were expedient for me in mine other book. So now he's talking about the plates as books. But once again, he wants to make that distinction clear to the audience. Hey, I've written this stuff here, and my father prophesied and said a lot of things unto my brethren. Those are in this other set of plates, right? They're not here. I'm not going to write them down here. I wrote some of them down, but if you want the full account, it's over here in these other plates. And also many more things which I do not write in this book, for I have written as many of them as were expedient for me in mine other book. Why does he care to make that distinction? That's a question. So that's example number 6. Example number 7 is 1 Nephi 19, verses 1 through 6. Once again, 6 verses. I don't know that it's the entire chapter this time, but once again, it's 6 verses. And it came to pass that the Lord commanded me, wherefore I did make plates of ore, that I might engraven upon them the record of my people. This is the first set of plates, the ones that got lost, the translation, the 116 pages. And upon the plates which I made, I did engraven the record of my father, and also our journeyings in the wilderness, and the prophecies of my father, and also many of mine own prophecies have I engraven upon them. Well, there's a lot of prophecies in them, so why a second set to have prophecies? I don't know, but that's the story. He goes on, and I knew not at the time that I made them that I should be commanded of the Lord to make these plates. Wherefore, the record of my father and the genealogy of his fathers and the more part of all our proceedings, of all our proceedings in the wilderness, are engraven upon those first plates of which I have spoken. Wherefore, the things which transpired before I made these plates are of a truth more particularly made mention upon the first plates. Okay, why is Nephi obsessed with letting the reader know all this stuff when the reader doesn't need to know any of this stuff? Joseph Smith certainly wants the reader to know this. Nephi, no, he wouldn't. Okay, it goes on. And after I had made these plates by way of commandment, I, Nephi, received a commandment that the ministry and the prophecies, the more plain and precious parts of them, should be written upon these plates, and that the things which were written should be kept for the instruction of my people, which should possess the land, and also for other wise purposes, which purposes are known unto the Lord. There it goes again. Mm-hmm. Wherefore, I, Nephi, did make a record upon the other plates. It's when he says things like that, and also for otherwise purposes, which purposes are known unto the Lord, that Nephi starts looking a lot like Joseph Smith. Wherefore, I, Nephi, did make a record upon the other plates, which gives an account, or which gives a greater account of the wars and contentions and destructions of my family, yeah, with all the 30 total people. And this have I done and commanded my people what they should do after I was gone, and that these plates should be handed down from one generation to another, or from one prophet to another, until further commandments of the Lord. And he's going to finish out example 7 this way. And an account of my making these plates shall be given hereafter. Oh, yay, because we want to hear more about these plates. And then, behold, I proceed according to that which I have spoken, and this I do, that the more sacred things may be kept for the knowledge of my people. Okay, they could have been put down on the other plates just as easily as making a second set of plates. You could put sacred things on them as well as the narrative, but no, it has to be a separate set of plates that covers the same time period. Why? This isn't a good reason that you're giving, but to have a separate set of plates that covers the same time period for the lost 116 pages, that does make a good reason, but it's one that you already said you don't know about because you don't know the future, but God does. Nevertheless, he concludes, I do not write anything upon plates, save it be that I think it be sacred. Now, this is funny. Okay, notice that he has just dictated himself into a corner, because what he has just implied here in verse 5 of 1 Nephi 19 is that what is written on the other record, right, the large plates, I'll call them, is not sacred. And now he has to reverse himself and take his foot out of his mouth and say, no, that's sacred too. They're both sacred. So remember, verse 5 says, and an account of my making these plates shall be given hereafter. And then behold, I proceed according to that which I have spoken. And this I do, that the more sacred things may be kept for the knowledge of my people. Why would he write that? I don't understand. What he's saying is, I'm making these plates and writing the more sacred stuff on it. I'm doing this that the more sacred things may be kept for the knowledge of my people. Well, the other plates are going to be accessible to your people too. If you wrote the more sacred parts on the other plates, the large plates, they would be accessible to your people. This is why it doesn't make sense as an explanation. And this is the corner that Joseph Smith has dictated himself into, or that Nephi has written himself into. And he has to hurry up and correct it. Nevertheless, I do not write anything upon plates, save it be that I think it be sacred. Yeah, it's all sacred. Don't get me wrong. This is sacred. That's sacred. It's all sacred. So why a separate set of plates, Nephi? And now if I do err, oh my gosh, look at him. He just talked himself into a corner, and now all of a sudden he's talking about his mistakes, which he just made, by the way. And now if I do err, even did they err of old? Not that I would excuse myself because of other men, which is exactly what he just did, but because of the weakness which is in me according to the flesh, I would excuse myself. Wow, that's fascinating. He talks himself into a corner, paints himself into the corner, and then starts talking about, don't blame me. and then he starts talking about, hey, don't blame me for that mistake I just made. Wow. Okay, but that was the 7th example. Believe it or not, there are more. And believe it or not, there are actually 10 more times where they're going to talk about these two sets of plates. I told you they were obsessed. I wasn't kidding. Example 8, 2 Nephi 4, 14 through 15. For I, Nephi, was constrained to speak unto them according to his word. For I had spoken many things unto them, this is Laman and Lemuel, and also my father, before his death, many of which sayings are written upon mine other plates. For a more history part are written upon mine other plates. Have you got it yet? Have you figured this out? You understand what I'm saying, reader? I've said it over and over and over again. And I have taken an awful lot of time engraving this down in the gold plates for you to understand. So I hope you're understanding. For a more history part are written upon mine other plates. This is Nephi's obsession. And Joseph Smith's too. And upon these I write the things of my soul, and many of the scriptures which are engraven upon the plates of brass. For my soul delighteth in the scriptures, and my heart pondereth them and writeth them for the learning and the profit of my children. That's example 8, going on to example number 9, 2 Nephi 5, 28 through 33. And 30 years had passed away from the time we left Jerusalem. And I, Nephi, had kept the records upon my plates, which I had made of my people thus far. Well, he'd made both sets of plates. And it came to pass that the Lord God said unto me, make other plates. This is, again, the commandment. Why is he saying this again? He really wants the reader to understand this, doesn't he? He's repeating himself. And it came to pass that the Lord God said unto me, make other plates, and thou shalt engrave in many things upon them which are good in my sight for the profit of thy people. Wherefore, I, Nephi, to be obedient to the commandments of the Lord, went and made these plates upon which I have engraven these things. That's completely unnecessary. Absolutely unnecessary. Except that Nephi wants the audience to know that there's two sets of plates. And why does he want them to know that? See the preface. And it goes on from example number 9, the last two verses. And I engrave that which is pleasing unto God. And if my people are pleased with the things of God, they will be pleased with mine engravings which are upon these plates. That's a redundancy. That's a tautology. And if my people desire to know the more particular part of the history of my people, they must search mine other plates. Okay, I think we got it. Thank you. You don't need to mention this again, Nephi. Example 10, 2 Nephi 25, 21 through 22, where he's going to mention it again. Wherefore, for this cause, hath the Lord God promised unto me that these things which I write shall be kept and preserved and handed down unto my seed from generation to generation, that the promise may be fulfilled unto Joseph, that his seed should never perish as long as the earth should stand. By the way, let me just mention this parenthetically. That's not what happens in the Book of Mormon. He says he received a promise from God, he being Nephi, received a promise from God to keep these small plates and pass them down from generation to generation, down unto his seed, his posterity. But what happens is not that. These plates do not get passed down to Nephi's posterity. Instead, before Nephi dies, he gives them directly to his brother Jacob, and then they go down through Jacob's seed and through Jacob's posterity, all the way down to King Benjamin, coincidentally enough. So this is another false prophecy in the Book of Mormon. Even within the Book of Mormon itself, it doesn't happen. Wherefore, for this cause, hath the Lord God promised unto me that these things which I write shall be kept and preserved and handed down unto my seed from generation to generation, that the promise may be fulfilled unto Joseph, that his seed should never perish as long as the earth should stand. And that's Joseph from Egypt. Wherefore, these things shall go from generation to generation as long as the earth shall stand, and they shall go according to the will and pleasure of God, and the nations who shall possess them shall be judged of them according to the words which are written. Again, that verse 21, once more, I'm not going to get into this in any depth, though I will in a future podcast, which I'm already blocking out, and so this is a particular interest to me, is that here it says that the records would go down, these small plates. Nephi made them. Nephi got the commandment. Nephi wrote on them that they'll go down through his posterity. He becomes the king. Of course, he will keep the plates. And I think that this is a hint that that's exactly what happened in the lost 116 pages, that they went down through Nephi's posterity. It's not what happens in the small plates. It goes to Jacob, Nephi's brother, and then down through his seed for hundreds of years. But I think this is a tell that that's exactly what happened in the original plates. And I'll get to why that's significant in a future episode. So that's example number 10. Now we get to Jacob. Jacob chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Guess what he does? He does exactly the same thing that his brother Nephi does and wants to tell the audience about these plates. For behold, it came to pass that 55 years had passed away from the time that Lehi left Jerusalem. Wherefore, Nephi gave me, Jacob, a commandment concerning the small plates upon which these things are engraven. This is where they go from Nephi, not to Nephi's child or son, but to Jacob, his brother, in contradiction to what we just read in 2 Nephi 25, I believe it was. Yes, it was. Jacob goes on, and he gave me, Jacob, a commandment that I should write upon these plates a few of the things which I consider to be most precious, that I should not touch, save it were lightly, concerning the history of this people, which are called the people of Nephi. For he said that the history of his people should be engraven upon his other plates. Lord Jacob, we know this already. Did you not just read the plates that were given to you by Nephi before you started inscribing? He's mentioned it time and time and time again. You don't have to hammer this into our heads anymore. We got it. Jacob says, for he said that the history of his people should be engraven upon his other plates, and that I should preserve these plates and hand them down into my seed from generation to generation. Notice the disparity. And may I say the contradiction. between 2 Nephi 25 going down Nephi's seed, and now all of a sudden Nephi's giving them to Jacob and saying, Jacob, they go down through your seed, through your generations, not mine, with no explanation whatsoever given for that disparity in the Book of Mormon itself. It is a wrinkle in the text. It's two places where the narratives come up side by side, but you can see that they don't exactly line up. There's a wrinkle. That's sometimes used for this kind of thing by Bible scholars in biblical texts, a wrinkle in the text. Jacob says, and if there were preaching which was sacred, or revelation which was great, or prophesying, that I should engraven the heads of them upon these plates and touch upon them as much as it were possible for Christ's sake and for the sake of our people. All right, that's example number 11. Let's go on to 12. I had no idea. I was getting shocked that there were so many examples. I mean, I knew I'd read it over and over and over again. I was starting to get attuned to that, looking for those references. I went back the other day, read through the 124 pages of the Book of Mormon, the first 124 pages, and boom, 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 and I list them out. I can't believe there are so many. Jacob 3, verses 13 through 14. And a hundredth part of the proceedings of this people, which now began to be numerous, cannot be written upon these plates, but many of their proceedings are written upon the larger plates, and their wars and their contentions and the reigns of their kings. These plates are called the plates of Jacob. Now that's interesting, because now all of a sudden Jacob's getting kind of possessive, getting kind of territorial there, Jacob. These are called the plates of Jacob, and they were made by the hand of Nephi. So Nephi made these plates for me, and now they're the plates of Jacob. You don't hear about the plates of Jacob very much in Mormonism. And I think this may be one of the only places it's referenced at all in the Book of Mormon. And I make an end of speaking these words. Okay. Well, I'm glad you made that clear once again about the two different sets of plates, the one for the spiritual and the one for the secular. Jacob 7, 26 through 27. It's the very end of the Book of Jacob. And it came to pass that I, Jacob, began to be old, and the record of this people being kept on the other plates of Nephi. Geez, the Nephites don't need to know this. They have the plates. Come on. You're not telling this to the Nephites. That's obvious. Nephi's not telling this to the Nephites. They have the two separate sets of plates. They're saying it to an audience that is reading the Book of Mormon in the 19th century, the 20th century, the 21st century, and probably even beyond the 21st century. They are addressing us today. There's no reason for them to keep saying this to the Nephites who live at that time, because they already have both plates, along with others. All right, and it came to pass that I, Jacob, began to be old, and the record of this people being kept on the other plates of Nephi. Wherefore, I conclude this record, declaring that I have written according to the best of my knowledge, by saying that the time passed away with us, and also our lives passed away, like as it were unto us a dream, we being a lonesome and a solemn people, wanderers, cast out from Jerusalem, born in tribulation, in a wilderness, and hated of our brethren, which caused wars and contentions, wherefore we did mourn out our days. By the way, notice that Jacob is referring to this other set of plates, which is being kept by the kings, i.e. Nephi's line. That's the line of the kings. We'll get to that here in another podcast. But Nephi's already passed away. Now Jacob is getting old, and he's referencing these other plates, the secular plates, the ones that are kept by the kings, as continuing to be kept by the kings. Did you notice that? I, Jacob, began to be old, and the record of this people being kept on the other plates of Nephi. Wherefore, I conclude this record. So there's an ongoing process. He's referencing this other set of plates kept by the kings. I'm just keeping these plates. The other plates with the secular stuff and the kings and the reigns and the wars and everything, that's over there in this other set of plates that is continuing to be kept. That's verse 26. Let's go to verse 27 of Jacob 7. And I, Jacob, saw that I must soon go down to my grave. Wherefore, I said unto my son Enos, yeah, he named his son Enos. Can you believe that? Nice job, Jacob. I'll bet Enos had a lot of fun made of him in junior high school. Take these plates. That's what he says to Enos. Take these plates. And I told him the things which my brother Nephi had commanded me, and he promised obedience unto the commands. And I make an end of my writing upon these plates, which writing has been small. And to the reader, I bid farewell, hoping that many of my brethren may read my words. Brethren, adieu, adieu, to you and you and you. So he gives the plates to his son, Jacob does, his son. Now it's going down his line. Enos, he tells Enos about the commandments that he'd received from Nephi. Yes, it's very important the audience knows this. And I mean the modern audience. Example number 14. There are 17. We're getting closer to the end. Isn't this amazing how much emphasis and obsession is given about these two sets of plates in the Book of Mormon? It's almost like somebody wanted to make sure that the modern day reader understood this, like really, really well, like too well. Now we get to Jerem, chapter 1, verses 1 through 2. Now, behold, I, Jerem, write a few words according to the commandment of my father, Enos, that our genealogy may be kept. Now, that's interesting about the genealogy, because I thought that was going to be on the large plates, but maybe he's talking about just their personal genealogy. So that would be a different thing. And as these plates are small, now he's talking about the plates themselves. Jerem says the plates are small, which indicates that they are of a smaller dimension than the other plates. Why would you call them small otherwise? I'm not sure. And as these plates are small, and as these things are written for the intent of the benefit of our brethren, the Lamanites, way down the line in the future, right? Wherefore, it must needs be that I write a little, but I shall not write the things of my prophesying, nor of my revelations. Why not? For what could I write more than my fathers have written? Well, it didn't stop Nephi from writing the same thing over and over and over again in 1st and 2nd Nephi. But okay. For have not they revealed the plan of salvation? I say unto you, yea, and this sufficeth me. So basically, Jerem just puts in a couple of verses. He doesn't put in anything else. But in those couple of verses, the one thing he wants to make sure you understand is that there's two sets of plates. That's the big message from Jerem as well. And in Jerem chapter 1, verse 14, this is example number 15, he returns to his theme, and I, Jerem, do not write more, for the plates are small. But behold, my brethren, ye can go to the other plates of Nephi. Yes, we get it. For behold, upon them the records of our wars are engraven, according to the writings of the kings. Okay, that's the writing of the kings, kingly line through Nephi, or those which they caused to be written. Okay, maybe they've got scribes. That's example 15. And example 16. Now we get to Omni, chapter 1, verse 11. And behold, the record of this people is engraven upon plates, which is had by the kings, according to the generations. And I, okay, this is Abinadab who's actually writing this. There are several authors that are scrunched into Omni. And I, Abinadab, know of no revelation save that which has been written, neither prophecy. Wherefore, that which is sufficient is written, and I make an end. Yes, after making sure that you understand the most important thing that I could tell you, which isn't about the plan of salvation, it's not about prophesying, it's not about my revelations, it is about the fact that there are two sets of plates, and the record of this people is engraven upon plates, which is had by the kings, according to the generations. Example 17, you'll be glad to know this is the last one. We're up to Omni 125. I mean, we're backing up against Words of Mormon, which we started with. Verse 25, and it came to pass that I, Amalickai, began to be old. And so I'm getting old. These plates are small, but there's one thing I really want you to know. And having no seed and knowing King Benjamin to be a just man before the Lord, wherefore I shall deliver up these plates, the small plates of Nephi, unto him, exhorting all men to come unto God, the Holy One of Israel. And then it goes on. It's very, very important to the Book of Mormon and to Amalickai that he let the reader know that these small plates of Nephi are now reaching an end as far as they're being handed down through Jacob's line. They're now going to be given over to King Benjamin, and he can keep them. And the reason that Amalickai gives is because he's getting to be old. Well, other people got old. He still went down through Jacob's line. And he has no seed, so he's got no kids, okay? That is not a sufficient reason in the Book of Mormon to have no children. And the reason I say that is because there are two times that these small plates of Nephi, according to the Book of Mormon, have been handed off not to children, but to brothers. And the first one is when Nephi hands them off to his brother, Jacob. And there's a second time when one of the people hands them off in this line, Jacob's line, hands him off not to his son, but to his brother as well, but always through the line of Jacob. So it's a strange thing. Now, it would have made sense, and I could have understood it if Amalickai had said, I have no seed and I have no brother. that would have been a sufficient excuse or reason to give them over to Nephi's line again, because King Benjamin is in Nephi's line. It's also at that place where the translation of the 116 pages had gotten to before they were lost. So everything is working fine. This cunning plan that God came up with thousands of years ago, or that Joseph Smith came up with in 1828 or 1829, is working perfectly. So here's my conclusion. Joseph Smith was understandably concerned about the fate of the lost 116 pages and whether they would be produced to try to spoil his claim that he translated the Book of Mormon by the gift and power of God. Joseph received a convenient revelation that there were two sets of plates that covered the exact same time period as the 116 pages that had been lost. The Book of Mormon, on the other hand, is every bit as anxious as Joseph Smith about the issue. But the writers of the Book of Mormon have no reason to be. Joseph Smith does. The writers of the Book of Mormon don't. And yet they seem every bit, if not more so, obsessed with this issue than Joseph Smith. Finally, if the Book of Mormon is just as anxious as Joseph Smith to inform its readers about the two different sets of plates covering the same time period, even though the Book of Mormon has no reason to be as anxious, does this suggest something about the authorship of the Book of Mormon and whether Joseph Smith is coming through louder and clearer than he might otherwise have intended to? And whether this is an example of Joseph Smith's fingerprints on the Book of Mormon, and more specifically, Joseph Smith's fingerprints upon the small plates of Nephi. Well, that's about all for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed this. This is original research as far as I know. I went through, grabbed these out of the Book of Mormon. It may have been done before by someone else. I'm not aware if it has been. It could be, and I not know. But at least as to me, it was original research. And I think it's very significant research because it gives us a window into the Book of Mormon and into its authorship that we might not otherwise have had. So thanks so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Please hit like, please hit subscribe, please leave a comment below. And let me play this wonderful little promo spot from Bill Real.
Hello, friends of Mormon Discussion Incorporated. I'm Bill Real, founder and CEO, reaching out to our incredible community. Our mission is to support those examining the truth claims of Mormonism and those redefining their relationship with it. Our acclaimed lineup of podcasts, including Mormonism Live, Radio Free Mormon, Mormon Discussion, and others, offers a space for truth and healing. But we need your help. Your donations power our work, expanding our outreach, improving our content, and creating new initiatives. Visit MormonDiscussions.org. Click the donate button and make a difference today. Donate to your favorite show, like this one, as your support empowers us to empower others. Thank you for being a part of the change. Together, we're making real impact.
So thank you for that, Bill. And thank you for all your donations to my audience. Your donations are keeping Radio Free Mormon broadcasting behind enemy lines. Thanks so much for watching, everyone. Good night.